This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
I'll use whatever experiences we had here and my best thinking and my best ability to listen to people to solve and address and to create a state that is much more focused on the individuals who make up this state rather than the lobbyists who troll the halls of the Capitol.
Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum kicks off his gubernatorial campaign.
What do you tell the gun lobby here in Florida that has a hold on you can't make a change without their approval?
I let them wear the deaths of the people in my community that are getting shot. I want them to wear it.
It's the start of Florida's legislative session this week. We'll preview some of the hot button issues.
Cuba is a very loving country. Most Cubans like Cuba a lot.
And unlocking the mysteries of Cuba, a special dispatch from our recent trip to the communist-run island, just 90 miles off the coast of Florida.
Come on, man. We don't even have food.
So, welcome to the real Cuba, man. Welcome to the real Cuba.
All that and more coming up on episode 96 of The Rotunda. The 2017 legislative session kicks off this week, and one thing is for sure, it will be a big show, and we'll be right here, tuning in to catch the highlights. This is actually the second anniversary of The Rotunda podcast. This weekly program has been going strong, covering everything you can think of, from state to local to even national politics. And we'll continue to do what we do best. So when it comes to the legislative session, most of the fireworks is expected from the lower chamber, as House Speaker Richard Corcoran already had many speculating session would likely crash and burn. That's due to his ambitious agenda, where he's been stealing the spotlight from the upper chamber and even the governor. Heading into this 60 days, Corcoran has managed to turn everyone's attention on the House to his agenda, where he'd like to focus on economic development, K-12 education, healthcare, the courts, and ethics reform. So it's to be seen if he's gonna get everything he wants. So let the negotiations begin. The typical hallmark issues will again circulate the Capitol, from abortion, the environment, and gun bills. Here is Senate Minority Leader Oscar Brainin speaking about the gun issue.
They're on the street. You know, you look at countries like England where they don't have these problems, you know?
So what's the solution? What do you tell the gun lobby here in Florida that has a hold on you can't make a change without their approval?
I let them wear the deaths of the people in my community that are getting shot. I want them to wear it. I want them to say, to understand, you that are searching for, that are fighting to keep guns in the hands of somebody that's gonna hunt, or keep guns in the hands of somebody who's gearing up for the apocalypse or the revolution to come, are wearing the deaths of these little children in inner cities across the country. You have to wear that. Mm-hmm. And I want you to know that you're wearing it because of fill in the blank. Is it one of those things, a zombie apocalypse coming? Is it just in case, you know, the revolution comes and Paul Revere comes riding through and you gotta get out? Because if I'm not mistaken, the Second Amendment was talking about as part of a rural regulated militia. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
There were about 24 gun-related bills that would expand gun rights. They face opposition from Democrats who are proposing more restrictions, but they have little chance of seeing any success with their effort. The budget, of course, will be a biggie. Senate President Joe Negron is looking to boost spending on universities and colleges. Oh, and he's pushing a plan to borrow $1.2 billion to acquire 60,000 acres of land to build a reservoir south of Lake Okeechobee to reduce discharges blamed for the toxic algae blooms. Economic incentives, if you're talking to Governor Rick Scott, or corporate welfare if you're chatting with Speaker Corcoran. The fight continues over plans to kill Enterprise Florida, while the folks at Visit Florida can breathe a little sigh of relief, though there is a significant reduction in funds expected this time around. So a lot of ground to cover this session, and each week, this is your place to be, to find out about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. This is The Rotunda. Visit rotundapodcast.com. for up-to-the-minute news and information, and follow us on social media at Rotunda Podcast. The race for Florida's next governor is underway, and currently, the person in the lead in what's expected to be a very crowded field is Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum.
It matters that we have a future for our children, and largely shaped by an education system that puts them on the path to an opportunity to learn and gives them everything that they need in order to be successful in the life ahead. And so it emphasizes for me why this race is so important.
Political science professor Susan McManus also weighs in.
I think it's very bold to go out early like he is and get himself known across the rest of the state. People in the panhandle know him well. And some of the activists in the Democratic Party organization know him, but a lot of Democratic voters across the state don't.
That's all coming up. But first, come with me on a journey to Cuba, the communist island just 90 miles off Florida's coast. This is a special multi-part series exploring U.S.-Cuba relations with special emphasis on Florida's relationship with the tropical island. Welcome to Cuba. I'm Tramell Gomes, and I'm about to share a snippet of my experience visiting the once closed-off mysterious island, which is still among the least connected countries in the world, though it's located just 90 miles off of Florida's coast. But once you're actually here, you feel like you're on the other side of the globe.
So why did you come to Cuba, first of all?
Should I be honest again?
Please be honest.
I'd like to come before all the Americans came here, before it gets too touristic.
We're always keeping it honest, Jacqueline. She's a tourist from Austria.
Cuba, describe the scene.
We are at the sunset here in Trinidad, up at the mountains, have a view on the whole city. It's very beautiful here.
It is very beautiful. One of the best sunsets I've witnessed in recent memory. Here we are at the top of Trinidad, Cuba. Not Trinidad and Tobago, Trinidad, Cuba. Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera. I've heard plenty of stories about Cuba from influential Cuban Americans who labeled the island as a totalitarian nightmare filled with grief, torture, and famine.
With the news that Fidel Castro has died, I join with the Cuban American community and the people of Cuba who have lived for decades under this regime in closing one chapter of this nightmare.
Florida Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Leighton.
I heard a lot of accolades about the great strides in literacy and against malnutrition and education. We know better.
Florida Senate President Pro Tem Anna Terry Flores.
It's a very, very complicated and personal issue. And really what we wanted to do up to right now is just ensure that that there's information that people understand what the reality of Cuba is, understand that Cuba is a country where visitors and tourists can have the very best and maybe eat at the best restaurants, but where Cubans get a ration book every week and are told what to eat that month. That's a very different reality than what is existing.
So I'm standing in Cuba in search of this dichotomy. Yes, the classic cars are everywhere, along with the friendliest of people stuck in 1950s America.
Cuba is a very loving country. Most Cubans like Cuba a lot. People wouldn't like to move to any other country because this is the place where they were born.
This Cuban English teacher and writer spotted me wandering around Cuba's International Book Fair in Havana and decided to say hello. I'll call him Ernesto to protect him from any unintended consequences from this broadcast.
Just a little while ago, we saw a very, very nice sunset. It's one of the characteristics of the country.
By sheer coincidence, I walked into the nation's most celebrated cultural event. It's like being at a giant fair where the concept of trash bins seems to have gotten lost as the ground is littered with cardboard boxes that once held delicious fried chicken and rice. I was in awe at the bounty of food, fun and games at this book fair at Morro Castle.
Just a little while ago, I was talking to a friend of mine, a friend of past, as a matter of fact, and he told me that it's the first time he sees this. He has traveled some other countries, but he hasn't seen this having families together, just talking, not only buying books, but also just spending some time together, having fun. I think it's really great.
Ernesto is very careful with his responses, especially when I asked him about his government's strict control over his people.
The average Cuban tries to go ahead, as we say in Cuba. No matter the circumstances, we try to go ahead. And now we are having a lot of opportunities that have been coming up with the changes, the latest changes that have been taking place between the United States and Cuba. I think it's a very positive step. And we are going to try to, we're going to take advantage of this opportunity and try to grow as more as possible.
Many Cubans see President Barack Obama's efforts to normalize U.S.-Cuba relations as a gateway to bring positive change for all. Since Obama's announcement, Cuba's leadership appears to be more flexible by allowing more Cubans to open their own private businesses. The Cuban government is expanding internet access from public squares into homes, while lowering its expensive fees. Tourists can now book their lodging accommodations through Airbnb, just like I did, and work directly with families who are opening their homes. But all of these changes hangs in the balance under President Donald Trump, who had this to say during his campaign.
But all of the concessions that Barack Obama has granted the Castro regime were done through executive order, which means the next president can reverse them. And that I will do unless the Castro regime meets our demands. Those demands will include religious and political freedom for the Cuban people and the freeing of political prisoners.
Florida Senator Marco Rubio, who is of Cuban descent, outlined what he thinks a deal should look like.
Here's a good deal. Cuba has free elections. Cuba stops putting people in jail for speaking out. Cuba has freedom of the press. Cuba kicks out the Russians from Lourdes and kicks out this Chinese listening station in Bejucal. Cuba stops helping North Korea invade UN sanctions. Cuba takes all of those fugitives of American justice, including that cop killer from New Jersey, and send her back to the United States and to jail where she belongs. And you know what? Then we can have a relationship with Cuba.
This was said before Trump became president. Now White House spokesman Sean Spicer says the Cuba policy is under review and human rights would be a priority. Also, Trump now says he shares similar views with Rubio on Cuba. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. Be sure to listen to episode 5, 18, and 85 for our ongoing coverage of U.S. and Florida-Cuba relations. For now, tourists are flowing into the once-forbidden tropical island. Again, here is Jacqueline trying to juxtapose what she's heard to what she's now seeing.
Yeah, it's difficult, especially when you live in a free country like Austria. It's very difficult to see how the people have to live here. But they don't seem to care that much about it. The people I talk to, for them it's okay, I think. Mm-hmm. Or they weren't honest to me. That could also be.
Yeah.
Maybe they couldn't talk openly.
But what if you can talk openly without repercussions?
Do you have any idea what it feels like to pretend that you're not from your country, to be really treated like a person?
This Cuban art dealer wanted to remain anonymous.
How do I identify you?
You don't. You don't.
What should I call you?
Why everyone not related to me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's f***ing sad, man. I'm asking you not to say my name, mm-hmm. not to say where I live, because I'm scared that I could lose my business and my whole freedom and my whole life, my whole future. Because there's a motherfucker on top who runs this f***ed up country. And he does not want that this truth gets known by the ones outside.
He explains how on many occasions what he's had to do to escape the harsh life for the average Cuban.
It's a paradise for tourists. You can come here, smoke weed, get yourself relaxed, have sex. I know, just lie down and take a look at the clouds and see how they form stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe go to the beach, take the sun, eat food, have beer, get all the things you want to get yourself relaxed and loose. You can do that. And you are from the United States. Mm-hmm. I was born in here. Why can't I?
We will find out why on the next episode of The Rotunda. You don't want to miss this compelling interview. To give some additional perspective, the arrival of the internet is one of the biggest revolutions this island has seen since Fidel Castro's revolution in 1959. In July of 2015, just 2 years ago, the Cuban people were given access to the outside world with public use of the internet.
I never Google anything. I don't know what internet is like. I've never been typing anything in the internet.
You haven't? And I would think you would. You
30 years old.
Your access.
30 years old. Never met.
Just 2 years ago.
You can laugh if you want to.
I'm not laughing. I'm just surprised.
No. I wouldn't feel mocked.
No,
at all.
I wouldn't be mocking or like I'm just surprised because I am talking to you as someone who is educated, who seems to know what's happening outside of Cuba and has a sense of awareness compared to as you describe the rest of the Cuban people. So I'm like, you have access or ability in some way, shape, or form. So where is this knowledge coming from?
You, foreigners, and books.
Have any questions about this story? Send me a note or tag me on social media at TrimmelG or at Rotunda Podcast. Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum has officially thrown his hat in the race for governor. Since his announcement, political newcomer and Orlando executive Chris King announced he's jumping into the race.
He was kind enough to call and inform me that he had filed his papers. I welcomed him over the phone into the race. I don't know him. I've never met him personally. I read a little bit about him, but he certainly seems like a nice enough guy. And the truth is I love the fact that after 20 years of not really having a contest when it comes to the Democratic primary, that we actually get to have an exchange of ideas.
As you already know, Senator Jack Latvala says he is one of the most qualified in terms of experience for the governorship.
I mean, I have as much or more experience in government and in private business as any of the other candidates. Why should I not offer myself up?
But here is my conversation with Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum.
So, you last time we talked was in a coffee shop. I don't even know what it was about, but
now
you're running.
It was like decades ago.
You're running for governor. Why?
Well, I mean, as you know, here in the state's capital, we get a first row seat to what happens over across the street in that big, big, big building. And over the last 20 years, and maybe even longer, we've watched really so much of what we care about, certainly I care about to speak for myself, come under attack. We watched the governor refuse health insurance to 1.5 million of the most medically needy in the state of Florida, the most indigent. We saw him return $1 billion to the federal government, never mind Florida is a donor state to the nation. Which would have, had we accepted it, put tens of thousands, my guess, to work up and down the state of Florida. It would have also helped to move us pretty squarely into the 21st century of transportation. Mm-hmm. It's actually older. It's like the 19th century of transportation, but an updated version of moving around this state. We've seen a governor that, while watching Miami Beach flood on a non-rain day due to high tide, say that he's not a scientist and therefore can't speak on global warming or sea level rise. There are real challenges that our state has confronted. Our kids and our K-12 system, and even before that, our 0-5 system, how we treat our youngest, most precious, most important investment, the way we treat them by testing them through the roof, a test that tells you very little about what they know, but a lot about how well they test in a high-stress environment. So much so that you now have over 80 institutions of higher education that no longer use them in criterion when accepting students. When I was growing up and when you were growing up, you'd be tested routinely through the coursework. And I would argue I came out pretty okay. Mm-hmm. There needs to be a real return to some of the basics in our state, while at the same time leaning forward into what Florida's future looks like. We're the third largest state in America. We ought to be setting the example. We ought to be leading in a direction that puts us at the top of positive indicators and not negative indicators. And it's my hope that I'll use whatever experiences we had here and my best thinking and my best ability to listen to people to solve and address and to create a state that is much more focused on the individuals who make up this state rather than the lobbyists who troll the halls of the Capitol running roughshod over the legislative and gubernatorial process.
It takes a lot to run for governor.
It does.
And you just spoke of kids, and you have twins.
Yes.
And are expecting,
a third?
Just boy. One? Just a boy?
Just
okay.
One, man.
How are you going to balance the strain? It takes a lot to run
sure
for governor
it does.
And to run around the state and all of that stuff.
Absolutely.
Building your name ID, which is lacking
yeah.
for a
Absolutely.
Statewide office.
Yeah.
So what really pushed you to make such what would be yeah. a difficult decision to be away from the family
yeah.
at times?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is a difficult decision. Frankly, anytime you run for public office, it's hard because it takes a strain on everybody. What I'm really blessed by is the most amazing partner in the world, my wife, RJ, who is fully encouraging endorsing of what we're doing. The way we both resolved the issue around our kids is we're just really glad that they're young enough that they're not reading and that they don't understand the news. Because races in Florida can be difficult. And when you're in a competitive race, people will smear you in such ways that you can't recognize yourself anymore. I can deal with that. I trust that I can deal with that. What I don't like that for that about that is my family, my kids. So this is an upside in the sense that if my kids were in grade school, I probably would have a different consideration around this. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, my oldest, my twins will be just under 4 and not yet in kindergarten. As we launch into this thing, but it's no doubt difficult, and my wife is committed to sort of riding with us along the way, and I want my family present and as involved in this so that this experience is one that we all get to travel together. In fact, I'm going to be at my best when my family is with me because it reminds me of why it is we have to do this work. Because my kids are going to be educated through the public system in this state. My wife and I have chosen Florida as home, my birthplace. And so it matters to us what happens. It matters that we have a future for our children and largely shaped by an education system that puts them on the path to an opportunity to learn and gives them everything that they need in order to be successful in the life ahead. And so it emphasizes for me why this race is so important.
We've already been seeing the attacks, and there's going to be more to come from the Republicans
yeah.
over the email. Is server?
No, sir.
No, it's not on the server, but no, it's something with email.
Yeah,
Democrats?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few emails that were sent from our email, which should not have been, when I learned about them, I said that it should not have happened. I then took the responsibility of saying, I will pay for the system, even though it's been used largely for government purposes, and I'll buy that system. And so I did that yesterday, and now we're moving past it. I realize that the Republicans are going to, you know, do what it is that they do, but that's exactly what happens when you're fighting against power. I mean, these folks have spent, and the interests that fund them have spent the last 20 years buying this state. The state is theirs as far as they're concerned. And anyone who presents a threat to the power that they have purchased is meant to be demolished. And so what they don't know, though, is that there are more of us than there are of them. And through this race, by putting people, their interests first, we're going to show them a lesson and send them backing and let them know that the state of Florida belongs to the people of Florida, not the special interest.
What makes you think you can be governor?
Yeah.
What makes you think now is the time to strike out and run this office?
You know, I could run off a record, and the fact that I would be, of all the names that have been thrown out there at this time, the one with the longest public policy making history, 15 years. But the truth is that wouldn't be enough to move anyone to run for an office like this. For me, what has frankly is decisive around the why me and why now is, one, the situation makes it necessary. We have been repeatedly losing in this state, and they've been close races, all of them within 1% margins in the general election. We're at a mood and at a place in this country where people want a fighter. They want somebody they can believe in. They want to hear someone not equivocate on where it is that they stand and what they believe. They want folks to go into this very difficult work of change making and to do it unapologetically. If you look back over the course of my experience as an elected official, you're going to see that I'm that kind of person. And what I want to be in support of is a candidate who I don't have to hold my nose and vote for. And if I'm hopefully a candidate that people don't have to hold their nose and vote for, that they can go into it willingly and say, this is my guy. And I'm telling you, by the energy we've seen already just in our online activity, barely having made an ask, 1,000 people already having gone on and given in a range of sums, signing up for recurring gifts, overwhelming the small staff that I have saying, I want to host something. We want to have the mayor come and speak. We want to get out there and do whatever we can to support this man, because I believe that tells me there's something out there. And I'm excited about that something. And we're going to go out there and see how much of it is. And is there enough to help us secure the Democratic nomination? And then, most importantly, power forward to win in November of 2018, to elect a governor who, again, will put people back in the governing seat.
Who's going to be helping you with some political capital? Are we going to see former President Barack Obama coming out to events?
You know what?
Hillary Clinton.
That's down the road. I think where we are right now are trying to capture the energy and even imagination of the everyday people of this state who believe that this state can work again for them. And so while most probably would go out there and try and secure a bunch of endorsements of high-profile names, that's not going to be my approach. If we get endorsements at this point, it'll be because people are also feeling so moved. But our conversations are going to be with people, everyday folks, who we will rely on and will need if we're going to win this state. And I believe we can do it.
All right. Thank you so much for taking this time to speak with me.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jamel. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
Right before Gillum's press conference, University of South Florida political science professor Susan McManus was strolling across City Hall from the Capitol and stopped and shared her two cents.
I think it's very bold to go out early like he is and get himself known across the rest of the state. People in the panhandle know him well, and some of the activists in the Democratic Party organization know him, but a lot of Democratic voters across the state don't. Now's the time when you have to start locking in supporters. You have to start raising money, and it's never too early, because 2018 is right around the corner. I know a lot of people are very experiencing voter fatigue, but early things that he's doing are not about necessarily reaching the broader public. It's about reaching the activists within the Democratic Party, and it's never too soon to start with that.
Aside from not being well known outside of Tallahassee, what other challenges do you see that will come across for Mayor Gillum?
It will be a very crowded field. There will be people who have a lot more money than he does. There will be, of course, many are expecting Gwen Graham. She will have a big following. She'll, you know, the women's vote is likely to be higher this time out if we're looking at the women's marches as any indicator. It'll be very, very competitive, and it will absolutely take going around this state over and over again and introducing and reintroducing yourself to the electorate.
What are his assets? Is it his youth? What's going to make his appeal broad that's working for him?
It's clearly his youth and the growing diversity of the state of Florida and interest, particularly among younger voters, in diversity on a ticket. That was one of the things that really hurt Hillary Clinton, was the younger voters didn't show, as they did for Obama. And as we know, that half of Florida's registered voters are millennials and Gen Xers.
That's political science professor Susan McManus. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Special thanks to Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum and the people of Cuba with their generous hospitality. Be sure to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com, where you can find out more information on how to sponsor or donate to this program. And with that, join us again next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.